Well, you couldn't assemble a less likely cast of characters to make peace in the Middle East. Sadat was a visionary, but his background was that he had been an assassin. He was a Nazi collaborator. He worked with some Nazi spies, and he spent 5 years in prison before escaping. And yet he proved to be an extraordinary individual once he came into power. Menachem Begin had grown up in Poland, and when the Nazis came into the little town of Brisk, they executed 5,000 people. But Menachem was hiding in Lithuania at the time and spent 2 years in Soviet prisons before getting to Palestine and becoming the leader of Irgun, a terrorist organization that was directed at the British, and eventually turned their attention to the Palestinians. So these were the men that, you know, represented Egypt and Israel, and Jimmy Carter had very little experience with men who had so much blood on their hands. He had grown up in South Georgia, a little community called Archery right near Plains. The Carters were the only white family there. There were 55 black families. And Rosalind Carter says that when Jimmy was a boy, his accent was indistinguishable. The only Jew he knew when he was a boy was his uncle, Louis Bronstein, who was an insurance salesman in Chattanooga. And the first time he met an Arab was at the Daytona 500 when he was governor of Georgia. He and Rosalind had been to the Holy Land in 1973 and made a tremendous impression on both of them. And Jimmy came home determined to do whatever he could to bring peace to the Holy Land. And he told me he felt that God had put him into the high office of the presidency in order to do that.
Before we talk further about the process of actually making peace, if you could describe the wars between Egypt and Israel and what they were about, why peace was so necessary?
Well, Israel came into existence in May of 1948. The UN partitioned the Ottoman province of Palestine, and half of it, more or less, was set aside for the Jews, and the other half for Palestine, the two states that the UN intended to create. But the day that Israel came into existence, five Arab armies attacked. In 1956, Israel conspired with England and France. Nasser had just nationalized the Suez Canal, which was mostly owned by England and France, and so they persuaded Israel to create a provocative act of war, which was to take over the Sinai Peninsula. It consolidated in the minds of many Arabs that Israel was an outpost of Western colonialism. Then there was one final war just before Camp David in 1973. Israel, now feeling invulnerable and maybe a little smug about its position in the Middle East, in 1973, Anwar Sadat surprised Israel by sending his army across the Suez Canal. Israel lost 200 tanks, 35 aircraft, and several hundred soldiers within 24 hours. And within 2 days, those losses had doubled. The country was in panic. And American intelligence detected that that Israel was arming its nuclear weapons. Nixon promised to resupply the Israelis, and the Soviets began resupplying the Arabs. The superpowers got entangled, and Nixon, who was under siege in Watergate and drinking too heavily, raised the nuclear threat level to the highest it had ever had been since the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it took an extremely skillful diplomacy on the part of Henry Kissinger to disentangle the armies and bring the superpower train wreck to a halt. But that was the story of the first 30 years of Israel's existence, almost continual warfare, and each time more dangerous and implicating superpowers of the time.
Do you think that Carter was prepared to take on something this daunting at the time of the talks?
Well, Carter told me that he felt that God had placed him in this high position in order to bring peace to the Holy Land. Walter Mondale said he was shocked when Carter told him on his first day in office that he intended to achieve a comprehensive peace in the Middle East, a well-known trap for American politicians. And Carter began interviewing Middle East leaders to see if there was a responsive personality that he could work with. And he was very dismayed by the cast of people that came through the White House to pay their honor to the new president until he met Anwar Sadat. And he actually said often that he loved Anwar Sadat, and it's not the normal language of international diplomacy. But there was obviously a kinship between the two men. Begin was elected in a surprise in 1977, and Carter was very dismayed by the language that Begin was using about the occupied territories and seeming to renounce the UN Resolution 242 that required Israel to return the territories captured in war. And indeed, Begin would prove to be a very difficult customer for Carter. I think Carter had a very naive idea that he could just get, you know, these two men together, both honorable men, put them behind closed doors. They would get to know each other. They would get to like each other. They would trust each other. They would find their way to peace. He was completely wrong on all of that. By the second day, he had to physically separate them. They could not be in the same room with each other. Now, there were times when both Begin and Sadat threatened to leave the camp. And when Sadat ordered the helicopter and packed all his bags, Carter was, he told me he'd never been angrier in his life. He went to Sadat, a man he thought of as his cherished friend, and told him that if he did this, that the Americans and the Egyptians would have no more relationships and their friendship would be broken. And if there's another war, Egypt would be alone and friendless in the world. And it's all on him right now. You know, make your decision. Choose right now whether you're going to go or stay. It was a very confrontive, aggressive moment for Carter. And Sadat agreed he would stay. And when Begin came to Camp David, he really felt he had nothing to lose because the status quo was fine with him. But Carter told him that if he was responsible for causing the talks to fail, he was going to let the American people know. He was going to go to Congress and put the blame on Begin. It wasn't Egypt and Israel negotiating with each other. They were negotiating with the United States. And it made it possible for them to make concessions to the United States that they couldn't make to each other in order to achieve the peace that they both wanted.
So at what point in this almost two-week period was there some sign of an agreement? And what was the huge document that came out of this?
The settlements in the West Bank, this was a huge issue for Begin. And then there was the issue of Sinai. Sinai had been the historic concourse for Egyptian armies that were attacking Israel in four wars. And for many Israelis, including Menachem Begin, it was their safety zone, their area of protection from the main Arab force. And there were many Israeli settlements in Sinai. And finally, he told Carter that he would never personally recommend that the settlements be abandoned. And that Carter learned that when you're talking to Begin, to listen to exactly what he's saying, because he was very, very precise with every word. And Carter later came back to him and asked, does that mean that if we took it to the Knesset and the Israeli parliament, and put it to a vote that you would not stand against it? And Begin agreed that he would do that. And that way he didn't have to personally say we're abandoning the settlements. But in effect, Carter knew the Knesset would vote for it. So he agreed essentially to do it in that form so he didn't have to do it himself.
Has there ever been another peace accord in the Middle East as effective as this one? And how has Egypt's relationship fared with Israel in the 35 years since the signing of the treaty?
This treaty really stands alone because Egypt was the only Arab country that really posed a genuine threat to Israel's existence. Neither side loves this treaty. And I think that's just an indication of how hard it was to get this peace and the sacrifices that each side felt that they had to make. now Egypt and Israel, I think, are closer than they've ever been. And that wouldn't be possible if it weren't for the Camp David Accords.